I appreciate the invitation to be back with you. I thoroughly enjoyed being with you 3 years ago, and I know I will do the same this time around. I hope you do as well. It's always good to get back to West Texas. My parents met in Lubbock. My grandparents lived for 30 years in Dumas. I was born in Borger. I went to high school in Midland. My mother still has land outside Dimmitt. So this is good to get back home. I appreciate so much this opportunity on so many different levels. We're going to be talking about priorities this morning. And, you know, one of my top priorities coming to town was the first thing I did when I got into town was to eat a Taco Villa. Those started in Odessa, and I grew up on Taco Villa. And you just can't beat a green meat burrito. You just can't beat that, or a Guadalajara. So I just thank you all for being so gracious to me, allowing me the privilege of coming back and preaching for you. I enjoy preaching so much, and I hope that we'll have just a wonderful week together. This morning, what we want to talk about is setting priorities. And as we get into the material, let's define some terms. First of all, what is a priority? Well, a priority is things that you consider as more important than other things. Synonyms would include prime concerns, most important considerations, primary issues. For example, if you're from Searcy, Arkansas, and you were raised in West Texas, one of your prime concerns when you get to town is to eat a Taco Villa. And if you hadn't eaten for 24 hours, that would certainly be a high priority item. So that's what priorities are. What do you mean by setting a priority? You look up in the dictionary's definition of setting things, it means putting things in their specified places or positions. So if you set the table, what you're doing is putting your knives, forks, spoons, and plates in the specific area that they need to be. So if you take those definitions and you ask the question, what does it mean to set priorities? Well, it means to decide, really, boil it all down. When you're talking about setting priorities, you're talking about deciding what is really important to you. And what we want to do in this morning's class is talking about setting priorities. In this morning's sermon, I want to talk further about our highest priority. We'll talk about that in this lesson a little bit, but we'll talk about it in a different way in the Sunday morning sermon. Tonight, we want to talk about keeping our priorities straight. It's one thing to set your priorities. It's another thing to keep them straight. We'll talk about how we can do that tonight. And then throughout the week, we want to talk about what I think are some very high priority items. Just to review what we're going to talk about, kind of whet your appetite. On Monday, we're going to talk about learning to control our temper. I don't know about you, but for me, that's always been a high priority item. That's something I wrestle with. And we'll talk Monday night about how we can be angry, but we still don't need to sin in our anger. And so many problems in life are a function of us not putting enough priority on controlling our temper. Tuesday night, we're going to talk about slander and gossip. And for Christians, I think one of the top things on our list has got to be to control this little thing so that it is constructive and not destructive. And brethren, we sin with the tongue so much. I think so many times we're not even aware of it. And we need to put controlling our mouths way up there high on the list of things to do. Wednesday night, we want to talk about distinguishing between righteous concern and worry. I never thought of myself as a worry wart, but I think as I got older and got more responsible, I found myself, I didn't really know that that's what I was doing, but I think I found myself becoming a worrier. And that's something that God says not to do. And you may struggle with that too. And so Wednesday night, we wanted to figure out the difference between righteous concern, which is a legitimate thing, and sinful worry, which is an illegitimate thing. Thursday night, I want to talk about the importance of being content. And I won't say too much more about that, except this is a sermon based on a passage that I got an insight from that I've never had before about a year ago. And I think, frankly, probably one of the most important items on our list of things to do spiritually is to learn to be content. And we'll talk about that at length Thursday night. And finally, Friday night, we'll talk about our need to reject denominationalism. Historically speaking, the churches of Christ as they exist now were born out of the restoration movement, a desire to get back to what the Bible says, do it and it alone, for the sake of glorifying God and bringing unity to those who claim to follow Christ. You know what? That plea, that need is just as important today as it was 200 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, all the way back to the very beginning. So those are the high priority items that we're going to be talking about throughout the week. Please come back, invite your friends, look at the outlines. It'll give you kind of an idea of where we're going to go, and maybe you have some friends that will have particular needs for particular lessons. Think about who might really benefit. Invite as many people to come as, with you as possible. Now, when do we finish class?
Quarter after?
Ten after. All right. Let's get going. Let's talk about priorities. The first point I want to make is that we're all setting our own priorities. Whether you're aware of it or not, every day you set your priorities. Every day, whatever it is you're doing, that's the most important thing to you, because otherwise you'd do something else. And that really is the second point, which is that our actions reflect our priorities. If something were really more important to you than being right here, right now, that's where you'd be. So your priority is to be here. Any moment of any hour of any day, whatever it is you're doing, that's a reflection of what you count as most important. Because if there was something more important to you, you would be doing it. Now, while we are all setting our own priorities and our actions reflect our priorities, while we do what's most important to us, does it necessarily follow that what's most important to us is what's best for us? And the answer to that is absolutely not. I'll give you some examples. You know, why do people commit sexual immorality? Well, because at that moment in time, that's the most important thing for them to do. That's what they prioritize. That's what they count as important. Is it ever best for you to commit sexual immorality? Absolutely not. What if you're lazy and you're sleeping your life away? Why do you do that? Well, it's because it's what you want to do. It's the most important thing for you. If it weren't, you'd do something else. Well, should you do something else? Yes, because what's most important to us and what's best for us aren't always one and the same thing. Take, for example, gluttony. You know, we live in a culture where we're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger to a point where we're having a lot of health implications because of overeating and those kind of things. Why do we do it? Why do we eat more than we should? Well, because that's what we want to do. That's what we count as most important to us. Is it best for us to hurt our body in that way? No. So I think we can go on with endless examples, but the point made is simply this. Just because everything you do is a reflection of what is most important to you, does it follow that what's most important to you is what's best for you? And the answer to that is absolutely not. So what should we do when our priorities and what's best conflict? Well, what we need to do is to change our priorities so that they are one and the same with what is best for us. In other words, what we need to do, if what is priority matter to us is not what's best for us, we need to get our priorities straight. That's really what that phrase means. We talk about getting our priorities straight. What we're saying is our priorities are not what they ought to be. What is important to us is not necessarily what's best for us. And what we need to do is to bring in what's best for us and our priorities in line with each other. We need to change our priorities to reflect what is truly good. All right. Now the question becomes, well, who's to say what's best for us? Take your Bibles now. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5. You know, this is one of the functions of faith in Christianity. I mean, who is to say what is truly best for Tim Norman? Well, if you're going to be a Christian, the answer that you take by faith is found in Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart." And I read from the New American Standard Bible. "And do not lean on your own understanding. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your paths straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. Honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so your barns will be overflowed with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine." What we are doing as children of God is basically going to God and saying, "Look, I'm going to, by faith, say, you, God, know better than me how I ought to live my life. Here is my life. Take and make from it what you will." So that's what our real high priority ought to be, is to turning our lives over to God. God knows what's best for us. And he basically says, here's what you need to do. Here's your highest priority item. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, what does it say? Seek what? First what? The kingdom of God. And I think the idea there is the highest priority item we have, according to God, is to seek the rule of His will in our lives. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, it talks about there how, you know, what is the ultimate purpose of life? It is to fear God and keep His commandments. Why? Because there's a judgment day coming. And as one preacher puts it, if we miss heaven, we've just missed it all. And that's exactly right. God knows what's best for us, and God tells us the most important thing for a human being to do is to seek to live his life or her life my way. And why is that? Well, if there's many reasons, but one reason is because there is a judgment day coming. And if we hear, depart from me, I never knew you, even though we've gained the whole world, if we lose our own soul, it profits absolutely nothing. So, in setting the stage for our discussion this week about priorities, I understand the theme for your congregation for the year is just that, setting priorities. And the elders asked me to preach a couple of lessons that deal specifically with this theme that you have. And it's a wonderful theme. We do need to set our priorities. And so what we've said so far is we're doing it. Whether you know it or not, every day, every moment of every day, you're setting your priorities. And your actions reflect what's really important to you. And that's humbling. It really is. Because sometimes we'll sit in there and we'll find ourselves doing things we know we shouldn't be doing. And you ask yourself, why do you do that, Tim? Well, because, Tim, that's what's important to you. Otherwise, you do something else. We have to understand that just because we want to do something doesn't mean it's what's best for us. And so when what's best and what we want conflict, we need to bring our desires in line with what is best. Who knows what's best? God does. And what He tells us, the best thing we can possibly do is to forget our lives and turn them over to Him and let Him dictate everything we do in word and in deed. Now, here's a humbling question. That's what our highest priority ought to be, but what really is our highest priority? What is our highest priority? Is it God? I mean, can we honestly say this morning, there is nothing more important to me in this world, truly and really, because my actions and my heart are one and the same, bent on putting God number one. Is that really it? Or is our highest priority something else? And let's look at some list of things that might be more important to us than God. Family. Turn over to Luke chapter 14 and verse 20. Luke chapter 14 and verse 20. And in this morning's lesson, I'm not going to talk about things that are inherently wrong as far as competing priorities. For some people, doing things that are just inherently wrong is their highest priority. I think for most of us here this morning, our biggest challenge is not that we want to do things that are inherently wrong. I think our biggest priority is that we, when it comes to things we do need to be doing, we just don't rank them properly. And sometimes the reality is a lot of us, we'll put our family before what is best. We'll put our family before God. In Luke chapter 14 and verse 20, where the master had invited people to come to the feast, one offered this excuse. In verse 20 says, I have married a wife. And for that reason, I cannot come. And Jesus makes it really clear that if you put family before me, you're not worthy of me. And we'll get more into this, but the reality is for a lot of us, wife and kids really come before God. Because the reality is if we truly loved God, we'd do some things for our wife and kids or our husband other than what we're doing. What are some other things that might compete for our priorities? Well, money is certainly one. Look at Luke 18 and verse 22. Luke 18 and verse 22. Here's the rich young ruler. He just needed to do one thing. He had one thing before God. And what was it? It was money. And so Jesus said to him, one thing you lack, sell all that you possess and distribute to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven and come follow me. But when he heard these things, he became very sad, for he was extremely rich. This guy had so much love for money, the only way that he could possibly put God first is to get rid of his money. Now, that's not something that necessarily everybody needs to do, but you know what? If that's the only way you can put God first, that's what you need to do. Remember, you can gain the whole world, and if you lose your own soul, you've lost everything. So what are some other things that we can put before God? Family, money. What about work? Look at Luke chapter 14, verse 18. Luke 14, 18. And I make a distinction here. For some people, career is everything. And for some people, frankly, it's not about the money. You know, there are people that have some low-paying careers that would candidly admit to you they could do something else and they'd make a lot more money, but they're all into their career. And they can end up putting what's best for their career before what's best for God, and therefore really what's best for them. Again, in this parable of the master who had invited people to the feast, if you look at Luke chapter 14 and verse 18, it says, they all alike began to make excuses. The first one said to him, I've bought a piece of land and I need to go out and look at it, and please consider me excused. Another said, I've bought 5 yoke of oxen, I'm going to try them out, please consider me excused. So here's people, they're not really so much talking about money as they're talking about their work, their career, their job. And taking care of that was more important than heeding the master's call. What are some other competing priorities? And realize as we go down this list that none of these things are inherently evil. Is family a high priority item? Yes. Is money a high priority item? Yes, you've got to have it to live. I mean, if you won't work, you're not supposed to eat. Is work a high priority item? I think, yes, I think God created us in such a way that one of our fulfillments is found in honest endeavor. I think God expects us to work and to do so joyfully because that's a part of our portion in life. Pleasure is something that God expects us to have. He doesn't want His children going around miserable. He says, in fact, that we are to rejoice in Him always. And again, I say rejoice. But the reality is sometimes we can put pleasure, which has a place, above God, who must take first place always. And you see that in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. 2 Timothy 3 and 1. It says, realize this, in the last days difficult times will come. For men will be, if you look down at verse 4, it says, they'll be treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Now notice what it says about this. It says, such people have a form of godliness, but they have denied its power. And we're to avoid such men as these. Now, we were talking last night about how people from Arkansas are crazy about the Razorbacks. They are. They're nuts, folks. I mean, they're a little over the edge. And if you're from Arkansas, I don't mean to insult you. I mean, I live with your kind all the time. In fact, I used to pick on the contrast between Texans and Arkansans until my mom came and visited me and discovered that my great-grandfather, who settled in Dimmitt, you know where he was before Dimmitt? He was about 40 miles from where I live now. So I've got Arkansas in me, too. But, you know, I grew up in the Southwest Conference where you had all these different state teams in the state, you know. But in Arkansas, and we had pro teams and all that kind of stuff, in Arkansas, all you got is the Razorbacks. And those people are passionate about their Razorbacks. And is there anything wrong with that? Not necessarily. As long as, and here's the point, as long as you're not more passionate about the Razorbacks and the pleasure that gives you than you are about God and serving Him and the pleasure that gives you. Is there a place for R&R in our lives? Sure. It's just not the number one place. Let's talk about a couple of other things. The praise of men. If you look at Matthew chapter 23 and verse 5. Matthew chapter 23 and verse 5. For a lot of us, we're more concerned about what people think about us than what God thinks about us. And again, is there a place for us to be concerned about what people think about us? Sure. I mean, in the qualifications for eldership, you know, you're supposed to have a good reputation from those who are without. So we definitely we need to think about what people think about us, but just not to a point that that's more important than what God thinks about us. Matthew chapter 23 and verse 5, it says this, speaking about the Pharisees, it says, they do all their deeds to be noticed by men, for they broaden their phylacteries and lengthen the tassels of their garments. They love the place of honor at banquets and the chief seats in the synagogues, and respectful greetings in the marketplaces and being called rabbi by men. And a lot of times we can read passages like this, And we can get a little harsh. I mean, how could people be so concerned about what people think and not what God thinks? Brethren, this lesson is not for people who aren't here this morning. This lesson is for all of us, myself included. My prayer last night was, you know, help me to say the things that I need to say in the most effective way possible, and help me listen to what I'm saying more than anybody else in the crowd. Because that's the way to be effective in your preaching, is you actually practice what you preach. And I need to preach this stuff. You know, is it easy to preach the gospel at all times? No, why? Because there are times when standing for God means you're going to have to stand against others. Sometimes the very brethren that you are connected with intimately and affectionately. But you know what? If you're going to be pleasing to God, if you're going to do what's truly best, if you're going to set your priorities in the right way, you got to be more concerned about what God thinks than what man thinks. Because if you really love people, you're going to do what's best for them regardless of what they think. And we'll talk more about that in the sermon this morning on love. In John 12, 42 and 43, it talks about people who love the praise of men more than the praise of God. And we should not do that. Here's one that I never have found really a verse on, but I know it's in there. I just haven't found it yet. And I know this is something that dictates a lot of people's behavior. You know, some people, you know, what's most important to them? It's control. It's being able to do what they want to do when they want to do it. And I'm not a control freak. I mean, I can lead, I can follow. It doesn't matter to me. But there are some people, I'll never forget, I was watching a television show about a guy in prison. And he was so bent on not letting anybody tell him what to do that there was some little thing that he had done. And all he had to do was like pick something up he had dropped and hand it to a guard. And anyway, it just went on to show in this program how he stubbornly refused to do this simple little thing, and it ended up costing him 5-10 years more service time just because control to him was his God. And we could go on and on and on and on, but there's a lot. And do we need control? Yeah, self-control is a manifest part of the fruit of the Spirit. So all of these things are important. They just cannot be our most important thing. And the question that we're asking here is, what really is our most important thing? Really and truly, do our actions prove that God is more important than any other thing I've just listed here? Now, here's another sobering question. Are we deceived about our priorities? Because it's a real threat. Look at Matthew 7:21. This is one of the most sobering verses in the Bible to me. Matthew 7:21 says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, do I not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" When I read this, I see somebody who absolutely believed fully and confidently they had their ticket punched for heaven. And on the day of judgment, they found they were absolutely wrong. And I can say with confidence that the reason why he didn't go to heaven was because his priorities weren't straight. Something came before God. But in his heart of hearts, he absolutely believed God was first in his life. And so what I'm getting us all to try to think about is, it's easy for us to say God's number one, but have we deceived ourselves into believing that when in fact it's not true? Let me suggest to you three things. First of all, deception's a real danger. Like I said at the beginning, the most important danger to the most important thing in your life is not, for most of us, things that are inherently wrong. You know, the things that most threatens your putting God number one in your life is probably not lying, probably not stealing. What's the biggest danger to your highest priority? It's your second highest priority. It's your third highest priority. It's things that are right and good and they have their place. They just need to come in their proper place relative to God. And I think because it's so tempting for us, for example, to put family before God, that we can convince ourselves that God is really first when, in fact, family is first. There's a quotation from Stephen R. Covey there in the outline, which I think is really good. It talks about some families, and it says, "Family-centered parents do not have the emotional freedom, the power, to raise their children with their ultimate welfare truly in mind. If they derive their own security from their family, their need to be popular with their children may override the importance of a long-term investment in the children's growth and development." That's absolutely right. If you want to do what's best for your kids, you've got to think more about what God thinks than what your kids think. Because, man, the kids have got a way of playing you. And is it enjoyable? We have the empty nest now. One thing that's changed since I was here before is now it's just Tammy and I at home. And she had to stay home and work. The paycheck that she earns directly deposited Florida College. I look forward about 6 or 7 years from now when college is behind us, Lord willing, if my wife and I survive to that and we're physically still able, we're going to take a little time for us and have a little fun. I wish she could have come with us this week. Maybe sometime in the future she can come with me if you consider having me back. She's a wonderful, wonderful lady. But our nest is empty. And now I've forgotten what. I went off on that little tangent. Back home. This is disturbing, brethren. I turned 50. I'm about to be 51. And both of my grandfathers lost their minds well before they lost their lives. And so this is funny a little bit, but there's a little bit of not so funny in this. But maybe I talk about it too much. But back home, they've started saying instead of senior moments, they've started calling them Tim Norman moments. And that's... I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Point that I was making was that we've got the empty nest now. And so we've been through the process of raising our kids and getting them out of the home. And for those of you who haven't started families or you're right in the midst of it, the bottom line is this. Those kids are going to tempt you to do what they want above what you know and what God says is what's really best. If you love your kids, if you really love your kids, you've got to do what God says above what they want. And if you don't do that, you're not doing themselves, yourself or them any favors at all. So, what is our highest priority? The first point is that we've got to be real careful about being deceived into thinking our highest priority is God when it's not. When it comes to raising kids, so often we can rationalize God's really number one, but really it's the kids that are driving the train. It's not God. And really it's inexcusable for us to be deceived about this matter. You know, if you look at this list, you see family, money, work, pleasure, praise of men, control. Like I've said, all of these things are inherently good. They need to be done. We can twist and make them bad things, but they're all supposed to be on our list of priority items. And God makes it very clear that if we don't put number one, one, and number two, two, and number three, three, we can sit there and say things like, well, I have to work. You know, I'm sorry, I'd like to, but I got to work when you neglect something that's a higher priority item. And the reality is, a lot of times you don't have to work. I'll never forget when I was a young man, I was a tax accountant. I was a CPA for Pete Marwick in Houston. And it was the middle of the tax season, and I called my wife and told her, there's no way I can make it to church tonight. I'm going to have to miss. Apparently, she told my sister that. And it wasn't very long. My sister was on the phone. She said, you know what, if you want to, you can do whatever work you need to be done, and you can be at church tonight, too. You can do both of those things. And you know what? She was absolutely right. We need to be very, very careful, understanding that if we don't have our priorities straight, if we're sitting there thinking, well, God will cut us slack because, I mean, work is so important. You know, he's got to understand that there's going to be times when we'll fool ourselves into thinking our priorities straight when they're not. Don't kid yourself. Deceiving ourselves about our priorities is an inexcusable thing. Dale Smelser talked about it in these terms in the outline. He says, if your job requires extra hour, remember Daniel. He had the responsibility for the security of a third of the vast Medo-Persian Empire, yet he regularly prayed three times a day, and his Godward actions were constant and predictable. We have time for what we are really committed to do. Exactly right. And finally, I would say, are we deceived about our true priorities? It's a real danger. We're not going to get any slack cut in the day of judgment. We can have our priorities straight if we want them straight. And let me suggest to you that not getting your priorities straight really is harmful. And the way I illustrate it is this. You know what? If you're going down this straight and narrow way and you turn 180 degrees the other direction, you know, and you do something that's inherently sinful like that, it's pretty clear that what you're going to do is something that's going to cause a lot of problems. But what happens with taking things that we otherwise need to do, but we just shuffle their numbers, we put number one, number two, and number two, number one, it's a more subtle thing. And what happens is we're still off the straight and narrow way. It's just not as manifest. But what happens is that if you keep on that path, ultimately you're going to get to where you've been if you'd made a 180-degree turn. And a lot of times what's going to happen is that if you don't every day, especially, for example, if when you're raising your kids, if every day you don't face the challenge of doing what God says, regardless of what your kids want, if you start changing those priorities and convincing yourself they're right when they're not. You know, when they're 4 or 5 years old, you're not going to see the fruit of that poor priority. But you'll see it when they're 14 or 15. And a lot of times that's going to be too late to do a whole lot about it. If you look there at the outline, Covey said this. He says, people often find themselves achieving victories that are empty, successes that have come at the expense of things they suddenly realize were far more valuable to them. People from every walk of life, doctors, academicians, actors, politicians, business professionals, athletes, and plumbers, they often struggle to achieve a higher income, more recognition, or a certain degree of professional competence, only to find their drive to achieve their goal blinded them to things that really mattered most and are now gone. And we'll talk more about tonight about how we keep our priorities straight. We've got to allow life to be dictated by God's priority and not allow life to dictate to us what we are otherwise going to be doing. So I want to make three applications in regards to setting priorities. But before I move on, let me just review what we just talked about. If you polled everybody who came in here tonight, is God number one in your life? Probably most of us would say absolutely He is. I got 5 minutes, right? The real question for us is He really? We can be deceived, and if we are, we're without excuse. And what I'm trying to say to us all is when God doesn't come number one, sometimes you don't see the fruit, the bad fruit of that bad decision immediately, but it will come. And sometimes it will come at a point where you can't do anything about it, so keep your priorities straight now. So three applications, and then we're done this morning. And I think this is kind of cool. I always talk in my lessons about applications, and I use this concept of apps before you know, Apple ever come up with this kind of thing. So let's make three apps to this morning's lesson. First application is that God insists on our top slot. He says, you know what? You can't serve God and mammon. Why? Because there can only be one number one place in your life. Let us all understand that God expects us all to be able to honestly say what Paul did in Galatians 2:20. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I live by faith in the Son of God. God has got to be number one in your life, truly, richly, deeply. He's got to come first. And I understand that every day you get up, that is a struggle, that is a challenge. But it's what we need to be striving for day in, day out. God has got to come number one. The second point that's very important for us to understand is why He insists upon that. Why, and we'll talk more about that in the sermon here in just a minute. Why does this God that created us say, you've got to do what I say first and foremost above everything else? It's because God is some kind of control freak who just loves having people do what He says and tell Him how great and awesome He is? If you think that's God, you don't understand God. God insists that you do things His way because He wants and knows what's truly best for you and the people that you influence. He came to this world, Jesus did, to give us life and to give it to us more abundantly. There's just absolutely no better way for us to live than the way God says. And that's what we need to accept by faith. And any of us who have lived any length of time, who have strived to do what God says, we understand, not just by faith, but by experience, that if you live your life the way God says, you know what? It works. Because it's true. It is what is best. And when we don't do what God says, it hurts us not only spiritually, but temporally, and it will hurt us in eternity if we don't repent But it will hurt us in time whether we repent or not. There are consequences of sin. Some are irreversible. So yes, God has got to come number one. But understand why that is. Because just as you want nothing but what's best for your kids, right? And why do you sit there and you preach and talk till you're blue in the face to your kids when you understand probably, as far as it is concerned, what they're hearing when you're talking is what the Peanuts characters hear on their cartoon. Wah, 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 wah. Why do you do that? It's because you're hoping that something is soaking in, and if they don't hear you now, they'll hear you 5, 10 years from now. Why do you do that as a parent? Because you want what's best for your parents, and you know in your heart of hearts, you know what's better for your kids than they do right here and right now. And what we have with God is a perfect Father who truly always knows what's best. And understand why He's begging and pleading with you to put Him first, because He wants you to have the best possible life. There is no other way than God's way. And the final application is this. Have we set God as number one in our lives? In the Old Testament, in the book of Haggai, God had told the children of Israel, build the temple. And they said, well, it's not time to build the temple. We'll get there, but we've got other things to build. For example, our own homes. And sometimes, brethren, you know what? We're building our houses, our physical places to dwell in. And we are neglecting the souls that are supposed to live in that abode. We can't do that. The Laodicean church was absolutely convinced that they had their priorities straight. And they were wrong. They were lukewarm. They desperately needed to repent. So I appreciate the elders for picking this year-long theme about setting priorities. Because in God's economy, there is a priority system. And He is number one. And the question that we really are ultimately leading to in this morning's class, is He number one in our lives? And if He's not, do what it takes to get Him there. Because I promise you, there's absolutely no better decision you'll ever make in your entire lives. Thank you all very much.